Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are bubbling along here on the 13th of May. Boiling out here in California. It's over 90 degrees, and it's going to be hotter tomorrow.
Wow. How often does it get to that temperature?
Usually a couple times a year, but it's usually
it's early. May
is one of the opportunities. Yeah, this is not unusual. I mean, it's not like 100, at least in the Bay Area. There have been moments in the past where we had no marine layer in July. July is the problematic time of year for hot weather. Luckily, we have a marine layer that comes in and goes, you know, from the low pressure created by the rising heat in the Sacramento Valley, sucks the ocean air in and cools us off. But if that doesn't happen in July, 110.
Wow.
No problem.
Wow.
It happens about once every 25 years.
Wow. Well, speaking of hot, the S&P is very hot, edging over 1,900 intraday today. Sets a new all-time record again for the second day in a row. Yesterday also on Monday.
It was rocking.
Yeah, pretty amazing. Dow Jones also. And this is, by the way, on news that economics are horrible. We saw that
more could you ask for?
Yeah, exactly. Do you remember when we were talking about, the winter storms and everybody's blaming the winter and, okay, don't worry about it, they say, because it's going to be a big rush to, recoup all the lost time they had shopping, and they're going to really see a major amount of recap of all this. And so we get retail sales come out today, 0% month over month, as compared to estimates of a 0.6. That's pretty awful, isn't it?
Yeah, you know what? These analysts, they're getting worse, by the way, with this kind of nonsense about, they'll all make up, people. There's another possibility, the idea that nobody bought because it was too cold to shop, and now they're accumulating this pent-up demand because they need to buy socks or whatever. They never considered the other possibility during these kinds of situations where you don't shop because you can't get out of the house, which is people sitting around saying, I didn't need to buy that stuff. I'm doing fine. Maybe I'm spending too much money.
No.
And then they don't have, there's no pent-up demand. It actually reminds them that they don't need to be spending so much.
There was a time I remember there's a couple of times I remember that I went around my office. Times are getting a little rough out there, and the economy's doing, slowing down. I said, maybe it's time just to look around and see what I'm overspending on, because you never know, until you do a little spot check, right? So I go around my office, I'm looking around, okay, what do we got here? I go, we don't need that ridiculous water cooler there. We don't need, that's $50 a month or whatever it was to deliver water. And we don't need this service. I call up Pitney Bowes, I'm like, we have this stamp service and all that. And I said, I think I can get it cheap. Oh, we can reduce your price. Now, they'll never tell you that they can reduce the price if you don't say anything. But you make a little bit of a squirmish about it, and they say, maybe we can do better for you. So they dropped the price by 25%. Same thing happened with my rent. I said to the guy, just so you know, we've been here for 15 years, and I'm thinking, we'll sign another, few years with you and all that. But, we've been good tenants. Why don't you consider, here's my deal, we're going to drop the rent by 30%. They're like, oh? I'm like, yeah, what do you think about that? Well, I don't know. I don't know. I said, well, why don't you, think about it? Anyway, so they dropped it by 25. You just got to ask sometimes, right?
Yeah, that's the way it works.
You got to ask.
I know they get it with your cable bill and some of the other phone bill, but cable in particular, you can get, there's all these, so now I got to drop HBO and all these things. You should be on this plan instead, and it'll be actually cheaper.
Right.
We'll put you on that plan, you'll get the HBO back, and it'll be cheaper.
Or,
you always ask them, why didn't you tell me this before? Well, you never asked.
It's the same thing when you cancel something. You're canceling this credit card, but if I said that I give you 10,000 miles to stay on, I'm like, okay, thank you. just get 10,000 miles. So you got to ask sometimes. Try it. Everybody should try it out there. Go call up one of your credit card companies. Say, we're canceling it just because, we don't use it. We found another card that gives us miles that are a lot better. And speaking of which, today I got a call from a client. He says, you won't believe this. I said, what? He says, I got this weirdest letter in the mail today from, I think it was Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, that if he puts $200,000 in a Merrill Lynch account, they'll give him $600. Now they're buying business, these guys.
Huh.
How creepy is that?
That's bad.
I mean, $600 is a lot of money.
Yeah, just for moving money around.
Right. I guess, you know, they guess on the spreads, even if you leave in the cash account. Anyway, so we did see that retail was down. We saw also that import and export prices were bad. We saw that in China, the biggest economy, they say, by the end of the year. Now, this wasn't supposed to happen for a few years, you know, overtaking the U.S. as the biggest economy. But it seems that this year, even with their slowdown, they're going to become the biggest economy, which is really interesting because you would think that the biggest economy would have sway when it comes to the global economic condition, right?
Mm-hmm.
So meanwhile, they're going to be the biggest economy if now they're the second. Retail numbers came in very soft there. Manufacturing is drooping. Home prices are sagging, blah, 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 blah. And meanwhile, their markets are not doing well. There's no question about that. But yet none of the world really cares. There was a time, actually, when China's numbers really meant something. I guess when it was good, maybe. But it's kind of interesting that we're seeing that kind of phenomena that, you know, you see the markets go up. For example, the German market, it's been a little soft and sometimes, but it's been doing. Today, the Zoo Confidence Index, which is the Consumer Confidence Index, was the lowest since 2013, like January.
Yeah.
But that's okay. You know, you know what that means? It's only going to get better. We're in a very strange environment.
Yeah, that's the way we're looking at it.
We're only in a very strange
environment. Well, everybody's, you know, it's this optimistic thing. There's nothing you can do about it.
And I think that goes a lot to the market, right? So you can have a tremendous amount of optimism where you see PEs expanding. You see the Teslas is running like crazy. You see all these stocks just like that are fetching ridiculous multiples. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden one day everybody says, maybe not. And they take them down 20, 30, 40%.
Yeah, that's the time to get in and as a short.
Yep.
Trouble is,
it's tough to find it. You got to be pretty exacting right now.
It's not going to be anytime soon, from what I can tell.
Well, we'll see.
You know, there's some guy who was one of these stock market prognosticators, some famous one. He said, July 1st. You know, July 1st is going to be a huge economic collapse. And all the stocks are going to, you know, and somebody sent me a link to that.
Was it a video?
No, it wasn't that thing. Ugh. Those videos. I hate those things.
You want to hang yourself after you watch those.
Oh, and they take forever to get to the point. It's just words. They put the words on the screen and then read.
Yep. It's good for
they're horrible.
Good marketing, though.
Well, they give you once.
It is. It's very good marketing. I know people do it.
Very few downturns that ever take place in July historically. In terms of market crashes or mass. I mean, there's the summer things that do happen. But the big one, as it were, as we like to call the earthquakes here, is so rare. July is so rare that it's just dumb to even consider it.
Yeah, and the whole idea of sell in May and go away. You know, a lot of people think, sell in May and go away. That means May is going to be a really bad month. No, that means the summertime, because there's lower volumes. A lot of people are away. Things get soft. You have, just a much greater slowdown. Markets will have less buyers and interest because it's kind of summer.
Yeah, you know, things usually pick up in September, October.
Exactly.
I mean, it's just a cycle. It's not unknown to everyone.
Right. So Apple is in the news. A lot of different things are going on here. They seem to be looking at buying Beats. Have you followed this? This is interesting. $3.2 billion for Beats, which makes the really good headsets.
No, they're not really good.
Good. Well, people think they're really good, but they're gigantic, if nothing else.
They make a lot of money on those things, but they're very popular. Yeah. That I can say.
Yes. But Beats also has a streaming music service, $10 a month and all that. $3.2 billion. I did not know what kind of ridiculous multiple that has to be because, you know, I mean, you got to sell a lot of headsets.
Well, it's 3X sales, which is high in and of itself.
So they're doing $1 billion in sales, Beats?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. On headsets.
Well, headsets and the streaming, but even though the streaming is not that it's apparently not that profitable. But yeah, I heard the sales are $1 billion.
Wow. So now I was wondering what Icahn was going to say on that deal because he's been, you know, all over the Apple thing with spending their money, et cetera. But also Apple appears there's another split coming with Apple. You know, there was a recent 7-for-1, right? That's coming. I don't know when it's going to be booked, but it's soon. So it was a 7-1-1 split. They announced another split today. This one is for the iPad screen.
Yeah.
So I guess they're going to like a Windows 8 thing.
Well, you remember that Windows, the Microsoft had shown a split screen device and then canned it, right? Remember that?
No, I don't remember that.
I thought the Windows 8
is you can split the screen. You push it up and move it around, and two things will be on the screen. Yeah, definitely.
Well, yeah, on a desktop.
Nope, also on the tablet.
What do you mean you can split the screen?
Well, it's not in actual split as in break it, but I'm talking about you take the screen and you take your finger and you move an app in. So you're looking at an app. Now you take another app and you move it, and it will actually divide it in half.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, that's their new thing. Right. That's, to me, is not a split screen.
Well, what's a split screen, then?
To me, it's two screens. Microsoft had a thing that looked like a book, and you could fold it in half. It was like a Kindle, and you could close it. But instead of having like a Kindle, where you have the Kindle part, you know, with the screen, and then the, you know, just a piece of leather or whatever, it was another screen. So you had a screen and a screen.
What's the point of that? Why bother?
Well,
why
like bother closing? It's like if you want to read a book, you got actual two pages you can look at.
Oh, I
see.
Everybody
liked it,
right.
But then Microsoft said, "Nah, we're not doing anything like that." I thought that's what we were talking about.
I don't know, but maybe it's. I thought it was a software deal. I got to look into that a little bit further. Anybody that like to tell us more about that, you know how to find us, or you could tweet it, you know, and put our little hashtags on there or whatever the deal is over at Andrew Horowitz. Say Andrew Horowitz one word.
Why don't we
or the
find
real...
out for ourselves.
We could. Yeah. Oh yeah. You want to do that?
Just maybe look it up.
That's too easy. You mean that thing called Google we can use, right?
Whatever the case is, whatever this, it's got to be something more like that. I mean, who cares about seeing two apps? You can do that. Can't you do that? I guess you can.
Now here's what it says. Apple plans to match Microsoft Surface with split-screen iPad.
No, it's just, that's nothing. It's so what? It's just a software patch.
Yep, exactly.
All right.
There you go. Okay, next. Let's see what we have. Oh, and finally on Apple, they announced that the potential for an iPhone 6 will be coming in August, and they're going to have multiple size models now, a bigger model. So I guess they're going with what Samsung has, thinking it's going to be smaller than the iPad mini, but larger than the iPhone 5. So new iPhone 6 coming.
Yeah, they finally gave in. They caved.
They had to do it. Listen, this guy is doing some aggressive things. I mean, between the buybacks and a few other things. I mean, Apple, and you know, Apple's recently over $600 again, finally, you know, with their massive sales that they had. It's amazing how many iPhones are being sold, or phones in general, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know how many phones people need. I still have a couple of phones. In fact, I even have which one is it? It's the, I have one phone that I took out of service after using it for about 2.5 years. It's a Google Nexus phone, one of the early ones. And not the cheesy early ones, but one of the first nice ones. And I could just as soon use that phone. It's right. Just fine. And the Galaxy Nexus I'm using from Samsung, I've been using it for 2.5, maybe 3 years now. And I don't see any reason to get another phone. I don't see the reason to just go get phone after phone after phone. So I can impress somebody with a phone that doesn't have any... You know, there's no style anymore with a phone like this, just black.
Right.
It's a black thing with black screen and a black back, and it doesn't need to be anything else. I don't know.
But, you know,
I think the iPhones are kind of clunky.
Oh, I don't agree with that. But, you know, I think you'd probably go get a new phone, maybe not on appearance, but if there was new technology, right?
Yeah, if there was something I could use. But this phone's got this one and the previous one. They've got the GPS that works. They got a, you know, this phone sounds fine. It does everything. It can browse the web. Does Wi-Fi. I'm not seeing the reason for swapping it out for anything unless it falls apart.
Right.
A lot of them do.
Well, hopefully we'll get some new technology. You know, one of the ways that...
What?
Well, I'm just going to tell you how it comes. I don't know, but, you know, you could find out and people could find out, because one of the things you could do is be involved in this. In the Stanford University Innovation and Entrepreneurship Certificate Program, which is sponsoring this show. And it's basically influenced by the spirit of Silicon Valley and this whole Innovation and Entrepreneurship Certificate. It's a professional education program designed to help you in the quest to develop innovative products, services, and organizations. So if we're looking for something, this maybe we're going to get from out of one of these programs some great innovation. I mean, this is taught by Stanford Graduate School of Business and School of Engineering faculty. 100% online. This is when you can do it in your own time. Learn thinking differently about whether it's business or new innovation and frameworks and insights from all sorts of places. And what you can do also is you could check out the free webinar, which is called Scaling Up Without Screwing Up, hosted by academic director and New York Times bestseller Bob Sutton. It's going to be on May 14th, which is tomorrow. Use the coupon code POT. Yeah, it's right there. So this is very timely, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's a little tight.
Well, you could still do it, and you listen to this, and bang. All you have to do is use the coupon code PODCAST when you register for your first course and get 10% off. All information is available at ideas.stanford.edu or call 650-741-1596. We have a link to the actual webinar that you can go to right on DH Unplugged. So there you go. Stanford University Innovation and Entrepreneurship Certificate.
Well, that's a good sponsor.
Yeah, I like them.
Yeah, well, Stanford's a good operation.
Right in your backyard.
Yeah.
Right?
Actually, I used to teach at Stanford.
Maybe you could teach one of these.
I could. Well, I'm not on the faculty, so I'd just be some guy, you know, teaching. It wouldn't help.
Well,
they have better people that if you those guys that are into the entrepreneur thing over at Stanford, they're pretty much specialists. And when am I an entrepreneur? I'm a podcaster.
Yeah, I think you're an entrepreneur. What are you talking about? You're like the king of entrepreneurship.
Yeah, maybe. I don't start companies where I have to go to work.
But no, sitting on your tuchus is good enough.
Well, you know, I can stand.
Let's talk about what's going on with the markets, just bring it all the way around. So we have this algorithm that we built that measures the overbought, oversold on the S&P 500, plus other stocks. But we're talking about the S&P 500. It's called the Arrow Algo. And basically what this does is it combines about 13 or 14 different indicators. Some of them are custom. Some of the standards. And we've kind of put it in a way that we could find out historically from current levels and current action of the markets where there is a significant overbought or oversold. Okay, so we give it a score dependent on where it is. Well,
right.
So the S&P yesterday hit 80. Today, it was at 80. Now, it doesn't go much higher than 80. I think it can go to 85.
Now, 80 and 85, what is that? That refers to overbought?
Overbought. Yeah, it can be negative. I've seen negative 75, about negative 75 is pretty.
So what's zero?
Zero is just a neutral. It could be. It doesn't really say anything. If it passes through zero on the upside, it's an uptrend that's about to happen. And that may be something. In other words, if it goes down to negative 75, let's say, or you know, negative 60, negative 50, and then it comes back up, and it goes through zero, that's a buying opportunity potentially, and with a couple other features. I'm just giving you the quick and down and dirty, or vice versa. So now if it's overdone and starts rolling down, you know, you get the downstroke if it meets certain criteria. But here's the point. Only 19 times since 1995 has there been a reading over 75. Only 19 times have we seen this kind of frothy.
And what happened on each of those 19 events?
I'm glad you asked. Hold on. I have it right here.
Did I set that up just perfectly?
Yeah. So.
Not rehearsed.
No, that's true. So I did some of the numbers on this, and it was a little bit mixed, but generally speaking, the next several days after, and we're talking about days now, up to about 7 days, it was a definite situation where there was a drawdown. Okay, so there was a reversal. Nothing major, anywhere from, we'll call it 2% to, you know, from about 1% to 2%. A lot of those, a bunch of 2% in here. A couple of times in 2007, it was actually up another 2%. That's when, you know, kind of when the markets were getting a little crazy there and they were actually getting really frothy. But then after that, 2009, 2010, we saw it draw down again. And the last time we saw this was 2012 on 718, the July 18th, 2012. Let me just look at this for a second here. Yeah, 2012. And 7 days later, the markets were down 2.5%. So 30 days has about the same record, about 57% of the time or 56% of the time there was a definite drawdown after that point. Sometimes it was very deep, upwards of 11% that we saw 30 days
when
later.
When was that?
I think it was 2010. 2010. So the question is, okay, what's the market condition, right? So 2007 was when we were reaching those highs. You know, things were getting really big. We actually had a reading on 516 and 928. They clumped together a little bit, you know, a bit closer there. and the market was up. It was up, then it started rolling over after that. 2009, 2010, they weren't that much. They weren't clumped up. I'm trying to find out where. 1997 is where they were really clumped. We saw 1997 on February, then in June, then in July. And then after that, the markets continued going higher for a while. They dipped down a bit. 2003 is really where it started getting ugly. There's a bunch of them in 2003, and then they rolled over every single time. That's when the market started. It's just usually what you – here's the point. Usually when you get to these levels and you see these things happening, they may continue for a little while, but it's also showing that we're starting to see some major topping action in markets. Now, this is options expiration week. So Friday is options expiration. The third Friday of every month is options expiration. So oftentimes what you see is that there's a price magnet. So, for example, right now it's probably 1900 on the S&P. Bunch of options on the call side. They'll fight over that 1900 line because the one side wants to make it, the other side doesn't want to make it, wants to lose the money, et cetera. Wants the other guy to lose money. So there's going to be a fight over this 1900 level, and I bet you that's what's going on right now, is that we're right on options expiration. The push that happened this week was to get it there, and we went above it for a little while today, then came back down. And the small caps, by the way, today, even though the markets were kind of flat today, small caps were down 1%. So you're still seeing a lot of the same names getting hurt, the small caps, some of the internet names, social media, et cetera. So I would just be aware of that and watch it right now, but we haven't seen this that many times, and this is 2 days in a row that we're at 80. And it's even more of a rarity to see them happen successively in a few days without, a change. So where does the other point is, where can it go from here? It really can't go any higher. So we're starting to see some real froth here. Well, we'll see. Let's see here. This is really interesting. This is the you've been screwed commentary that I think is all, really we should get into here. So, we've always talked about the whole headlines and not matching some of the commentary that the news media puts out in terms of economics and...
Right.
Okay. So, analyzing high-frequency data from the early 1990s, through June 2013, there was recently a research paper that found that robust evidence of informed trading during that period when members of the news media had access to sensitive federal monetary policy releases, but before they were made public. So, in other words, there's a embargo period, right, where the news media may get a news announcement that the Fed's going to lower rates or raise rates or do something. And they get this in advance so that at the time that it's scheduled for, 2 o'clock in the afternoon or 9:30 in the morning, whatever time it is, that they can put it out right away. But the news media has to have the information and kind of write a story about it, right? So what happened was they found that there was definite price action prior to the release of the data.
Right, right. Yeah, we've talked about this.
So this was a definitive, you as the public have been screwed once again. Now, what will be done about this? Nothing. I'm sure nothing. But, we talked about how, the suitcase indicator, remember that with Greenspan?
Mm-hmm.
And, or whatever it was, and the beard indicator with Bernanke, whatever it was, I think more so, that had nothing to do with it. It was really that there was some leakage of this data. And this report goes on and on about what was going on. There was an author wrote that in particular, we documented the presence of significant abnormal price run-ups and order imbalances that are in the direction of the subsequent policy surprises. So somebody got the information. How ugly is that?
Yeah, somebody should be locked up.
Yeah.
Can't trade on that.
Yep. That's true. But it happens. The height of insider trading and us as the lay people out there just get absolutely, obliterated with that. I mean, if you're trading, that is. I mean, if you just buy and hold, who cares? But the point is that it favors some versus others, which is really not appropriate in an orderly market.
Right.
Yep. So a couple other things. Let's see here. Oh. The RFK Center for Justice and Human Rights is a charitable group. Will receive $120,000 from online auctions of two separate lunches, one with Ben Bernanke and one with Timothy Geithner. He just came out with a book today, or yesterday, Timothy Geithner, talking about what he did and how great he is.
Can you imagine what, these things,
boring.
Can you imagine this being, this has got to be one of the worst, I don't know, things that a guy can auction. And people do it. I've known some people that have done this. You auction yourself off for a lunch. You really don't get anything out of it yourself. The money goes to charity or something like that. So you have to do it. You know, you're kind of cornered by somebody who really is good at sales to get you to do this, right?
Right.
And then you have somebody who's somebody who just wants to harangue you or talk your ear off or to
try, right. Pictures, the whole thing.
This
yeah.
cannot be a good lunch.
No, it's going to be awful.
Under no circumstances.
Right. Not to mention the media's all over it.
Right. It's either going to be a fanboy, somebody trying to embarrass you. Someone's going to humiliate you, or they want to throw wine in your face. I mean, I can see all the possibilities.
Right.
And why would anyone do this, submit themselves to this sort of abuse? It's beyond me.
I don't understand. Maybe a fly fishing afternoon or something, where you're private and you don't have everybody around you and all. But still, I mean, it's
Well, actually, you know, fantasy football and fantasy baseball stuff makes a little more sense. Because, you're not having lunch with the guy. You're playing catch.
Mm-hmm.
And, I got to play catch with, Willie Mays. What'd you guys talk about? Oh, nothing. We just played catch. I threw the ball to him. He threw it to me. And that was that. Now, that's okay. I think that's fine. Because it's not the guy has to be throwing the ball around anyway. You might as well just throw it to you as well as anyone else. But these lunches, it just seems
How about an auction where we go to the movie with Ben Bernanke? You don't have to talk to him. Just hang out with him. Or maybe even watch an episode of 20
movies. First, you have to find a movie that all could all agree on.
All right, how about 24? An episode of 24, or The West Wing, even better. You go to The West Wing with Obama. You see the West Wing episode of West Wing with Obama. No, or how about seeing the movie Too Big to Fail with Timothy Geithner?
Now that would be something.
Yeah, he could point out like, hey, that really didn't happen, and man, they didn't really portray me well, and That'd be kind of cool. Kind of take you through the inside as it's going on.
Yeah, you'd listen to him grouse. Now, that would be fine.
Yeah. from The Strange, we'll end on this one. We'll end this point. The strange stuff. Actor Alec Baldwin was arrested Tuesday after riding his bike the wrong way and apparently becoming belligerent with police officers.
Gee, I can't imagine, for one thing, Alec Baldwin becoming belligerent.
No.
That's just beyond me. But assuming that he did... What are they? They don't enforce these bike laws anyway, so they pull this guy over because he's going down a one-way street the wrong way.
How do you even go down? What is the wrong way with a bike?
The way I see it, the way these bikers are, there is no wrong way. They're all over the place. They're going through stop signs. Right. They're going the wrong way on the sidewalk. They're off the sidewalk. They're jumping around. They cross through the middle of the intersection sideways. So they pull him over?
I mean, you could walk.
He has to be one of the least of the offensive bicyclists in New York City.
You could walk down the wrong way on a one-way street, right? And
yeah.
I don't understand. Are bikes...
Bikes are supposed to follow the rules of the cars.
But they're not. You don't have a license plate on. It's not registered. It's not. I mean, it's not. What if you're on a skateboard?
No. They just had it in for him. That's the way I see
it. That's exactly right. Well, here's a real head scratcher for you. I would like you to please analyze this after I read this to you, okay? They say that Layman, remember that name, Layman, right? Layman has been the trade that keeps on giving. First of all, that is amazing to begin with. John Paulson, whose firm made more than $1 billion on its investment, told clients on a conference call last month. That's what he said. He said Layman debt has risen about 11% this year through the first quarter, and 45% since the beginning of 2013.
Really?
Now, I'm a little bit bewildered. Didn't they go bankrupt?
Yeah.
Okay, so their bonds are still out there? When you go bankrupt, doesn't...
I don't know. You're the expert on this one. Now, you have to tell me.
I am certain I could come up with some hullabaloo about it. But basically, they let the bonds trade.
It's like trading Bitcoin, the way I see it.
But it's not. It's trading Bitcoin with Mt. Gox. They're bankrupt.
Yeah.
So you're now trading bankrupt bonds. So basically, what you're doing is saying something like, I am going to say that this pad of paper is worth something, and I'm going to trade it somehow. I mean, it's not worth anything. There's nothing behind it. except for the fact that, you know, there is liquidation and there's been this ongoing liquidation of this whole deal. So they must have allowed these bonds that are probably worth absolutely nothing, but they must have allowed them somehow to stay as tradable instruments as the bankruptcy liquidation and all that goes through. And these guys somehow got their hands on these. And because of the strengthening credit market, even though the company's bankrupt, they made money on this. How weird is that?
That's very strange.
Yeah. I guess if you want to be able to make money like this, you can find some bankrupt companies, I guess. I mean, I don't know.
Is it possible for you that stock's worth something as on a reverse merger basis?
But who'd they merge with?
Well, somebody back into it. I don't know.
I don't know. I think they went out of business and nobody picked them up and it was liquidated. There was these leftover piece of crap bonds and maybe they were like worth pennies on the dollar. And these guys bought it saying, hey, you know what? Through the liquidation, there'll be some more money coming in and it goes to the first line creditors. So we'll keep that in existence for a while. And maybe somehow money was paid in through, you know, all the bankruptcy and the monies that they found, et cetera, and maybe some of the bad debt that was possibly even held by the Fed, et cetera, and it was pushed through, I guess. Anyway, that goes along with my next point, which is probably the worst idea of the century.
Okay.
Remember credit default swaps, CDS, right? That was one of the big problems with AIG and these companies that...
Right.
Yeah. So these are called credit derivatives. So now... Regulators this month signed off on a plan to allow trading in 8 new ProShares ETFs backed by wagers on the creditworthiness of the riskiest to the safest corporate borrowers. So now your average mom and pop are going to be able to trade in CDS.
Nice. That means they're going to get screwed somehow.
And some of these deals, which have underlying the portfolio derivatives, and we talked about this with like the triple ETFs and some of these other ones, you know, are oftentimes really... poor investments. They don't track it correctly. So credit default swaps, which are highly regulated, but they're still the valuation of them it's not liquid.
It's all sketchy.
And what happens is when you buy these things, what you know, usually buy them where you have to pay a premium for it, you know, an annual premium for them. So I'm not sure how this whole thing's going to work, but there's 8 of these things. I mean, 8 ETFs. I mean, I guess they'll have maybe it like, you know, on... corporate debt of, you know, high risk and high grade and maybe domestic and international. And man, this just seems like a bad idea.
Was it bad enough to short? What do you think?
I don't know. Wait for this thing to pile in and then, yeah, maybe short it. We'll see when they come out. They're not out yet.
Well, that's interesting news.
Mm-hmm. So, you know that we've gone through a lot through the mortgage and financial and housing crisis back in 2007, 2008, 2009. And there was a lot of regulations that were put on the books to prevent those kind of things from happening, right? So one of the things was, okay, well, you can't have like zero down payment deals, right? You know, one of those things. You can't have these crazy ARM, you know, adjustable rate mortgages. You know, you can have some, but whatever. You know, that, you know, securitization was really a bad thing and it needed to be regulated more, which it was, and then it was reversed, and now we have all the securitization going on. So there's all these things that were put into from Dodd-Frank and from all these different things that were put into try to ensure that we don't have a crisis like that again. So now...
Supposedly.
Yeah.
But they won't put back Glass-Steagall, of course.
Right, of course not. So federal regulators are now reversing course on some of the biggest post-crisis efforts they made to tighten mortgage lending standards because they feel that by keeping them tight could really snuff out the fledgling housing rebound. I mean...
Not much of a rebound, but yes.
But if it was a rebound, and if it is there to protect everybody, and the whole... They're now changing the requirements again. I mean, honestly, how screwed is that? How many times do these guys need to go through the same process of trying to... Listen, do you remember way back when...
They came out on the other end okay the last time. Why should they change?
Well, a lot of people were hurt. The government had to step
them.
In. No, but the Fed... I'm talking about the federal regulators are saying that...
Oh, yeah.
Right?
No.
So, yeah. So the government had to step in and, you know, had all these people that got screwed because they, you know, and they complained that they were, you know, shouldn't have been able to get the mortgages, but meanwhile they took it. And now they're reversing it. It reminds me of when Enron went down and this whole issue about derivatives and off-balance sheet financing went on and it wasn't going to happen again. And then four or five years later, just boom. Like nothing ever happened. Let's just do it again. Same thing.
Well, I think it actually has to sink the economy completely.
More than it did.
Put the half the country out of work and all because of one guy. That's the only time something real action will be taken.
Well, but action was taken. Now they're reversing it, is what I'm saying. I mean, that's
okay, permanent action. Maybe it'll never happen. The permanent action will never happen. It's always they're going to do a bunch of lip service, put a bunch of things in play, and then say, we don't need this and pull it back out. Why not? That's just what it looks like.
Right. If things don't go well, we'll just change it and make it, you know, we'll do things that maybe won't be good for the economy in the long term, but just let's see how it works. And if somebody gets hurt in the meantime, oh, well.
Yeah, as long as it's not me.
Right. Yeah, of course. So Jim Cramer did an interesting thing this week or last week or last few weeks. He comes out and says, big article, big video, sell everything in terms of tech and buy Alibaba when it comes out. This is the one thing that you want to have in your portfolio. The growth of this company is unbelievable. The IPO is going to be coming out soon. And man, I would sell everything. This was said. Sell everything and buy Alibaba.
Is this along the lines of his don't sell bear?
Could be. But different in that 2 weeks later, he says, Alibaba IPO is probably the worst thing that could ever happen to this market.
What?
Not kidding.
I haven't been following Cramer at all.
In this week's the Disciplined Investor podcast, I actually replayed his comments in sequence so that you could hear what he had to say. And basically he's saying that, man, this is possibly overpriced. It's going to suck up all the, you know, all the volume from other places. Why would anybody own some of these other stocks? He could probably back, and actually I think he did it again tonight or yesterday, he talked about this. He could probably back into the fact that he was being consistent, saying, hey, you're going to sell everything and buy Alibaba, in that Alibaba is going to take a lot of the volume, a lot of the money from other places. But then, and saying that it's the worst thing that could happen to this market because, again, it's going to drain some liquidity. But that's kind of not how the whole thing played out. It was a two-week span where, man, buy Alibaba, Yahoo's going to be great. And then Yahoo tanked 8 or 9% a couple days later when you know, the reality was, who knows how this thing's going to go. But then coming in strong, I mean strong, and saying, oh, I mean, I can't even deal with this when this IPO comes out. I'm taking the day off. I don't want to even see this thing. And rationalizing that he didn't say.
Well, he's got it covered both ways, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Whatever happens, he's gold.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. All right, so a couple other things.
When he made that thing about don't sell bear Stearns just before they went bankrupt, because it's a great company, to listen to him weasel his way out of that was the most amazing television you'll ever see. I didn't say that. What I meant was...
Right. Yep. But it happens all the time. I mean, he's, you know, depending on the market mood, they used to call him the reverend of what's happening now, or something like that. You know, he would say what was happening at this point, and then if it changed up, he just changed his commentary on it. Why not? Now, college football players, I want to talk about this for a second. This is one of those things that you wonder, like, what are people thinking? And this is kind of like, you know, when you buy stocks when you know they're terribly overvalued and then you complain that, oh, they went down.
Well, yeah, okay. I got burned.
Right, and then you're all upset about it, right? So college football players showing signs of injury deep within a portion of the brain that helps control thinking and emotion, including those who have not suffered concussions, researchers have recently found.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, does anybody really expect that if you play football and you put a helmet and all this stuff on and your uniform and your padding and you then take your head and directly lunge into another player that possibly it's not going to be a problem? So now they're all upset about this?
Well, what you're saying is apparently the obvious has been ignored.
Yeah. And now people
These helmets have been the worst part of it. I mean, if they went back to leather helmets, you don't have these kinds of injuries so much in rugby, which is just as violent a sport.
And is that because the players won't take their head and try to hit something thinking that the helmets are protecting them?
Yeah, that's one of the reasons.
I'm waiting for boxers to sue. You know, hey, I got hit in the head. I got migraines now. Okay, well, you did
the
choose
it. The community is very well aware of this, and they've always done a lot. They have, that's why they have the doctors next door. They can stop the fight. I mean, it's a sport oriented toward concussions. I mean, that's what a knockout is.
Yeah, no kidding.
But, you know, then you can't play again. You can't box again for like 6 to 9 months. With football, you get a concussion, you're back on the field the next week.
Well, I think this ties in very loosely, but ties into the idea that, hey, you know, it doesn't matter the PEs, it doesn't matter the valuations, we're buying stocks anyway. And that lasts for a period of time. But like we saw with many of these social media and internet stocks, it doesn't last forever. And when it goes bad hard.
Yeah.
Finally, on the area of some things that are interesting here, big article in the Wall Street Journal about how all the studies that have been done in the past on fat being bad for you are totally bogus.
Fat makes you fat, said Susan Powder. Stop the insanity.
Did you read this article in the Wall Street Journal?
No, but I'm very familiar with this research.
This research seems to be done by this doctor, and they all this research back from, I don't know, was it the 60s or the 50s, maybe the 40s, that he went out and did all this research in all these countries, but supposedly he did not, and specifically did not go to countries that had lean diets, and he made all sorts of errors with his information and just all of this stuff that went, and it's a very long article debunking all of this. I guess assuming that the fat was caused, you know, arterial blockage and possible other diseases of the heart, and it's really bad for you. And this whole thing has been debunked. I was wondering, I mean, do you think they, I mean, you have to read the article, but it seems so one-sided that they slammed this, all the studies. And I don't know if it's like the Bacon Federation is, you know, sponsored this or something.
Could be.
It's possible, right?
Well, I mean, there's native advertising, which has taken over the media. You never know who's doing these articles or why they're being written. I don't trust the media at all.
Right. What else is out there? I mentioned that we have basically the end of earnings season. I think we talked about how about 73% of stocks in the S&P 500 have beat expectations on EPS. But we saw that about 54% beat on revenues. Fossil came out with earnings. Came out with good earnings, but was negative on the outlook moving forward. Stock came down about 6, 7%. We do have Walmart coming out. Macy's coming out in the next couple of days. Should be interesting to see what's going on there. Seems there's been a real drive towards the larger companies. You know, Exxon came out with earnings, and it was, they weren't that great, and stock was down a few percent for a day or so, and then I think it's moving higher every single day from where it was. And we talked about IBM ad nauseum of what's going on there.
Yeah, IBM. Jeez. You
know, I'm still at 192 and just won't budge.
It's astonishing to me that IBM is held up so well.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. When, as you point out, it's really a hollow shell of a company.
Yeah, I mean, they have good revenues, but the revenues have been declining. The EPS has been declining. The growth is just, when I say off the chart negative, it's the worst growth I've seen on EPS on a year-over-year basis, which is how you measure these things, than even back to 2000. It wasn't even that bad in 2008. I mean, it's a little bit of a drop, maybe 4%. This is like a 15% drop, and nobody seems to care. You got, you know, don't forget, you got some big names behind it, right? You got Warren Buffett. You know, he's a big, oh, I love IBM. You know, he's you know, loving it. Why? Because they're serial, you know, stock repurchasers and dividend players and all that. So let's, how about we get to our stocks?
Buffett.
Would you have lunch with him?
I think having lunch with Warren Buffett would be embarrassing.
You think so?
Yeah.
Would you play cards with him? Ping pong?
Oh, he kicked my ass. He's a really good world-class bridge player.
Right. You ever play bridge? It's a hard game.
No. You know, I should have. I had the opportunity. I still kick myself over this. I know a lot of guys who play bridge. It's an interesting competitive game. I mean, Bill Gates plays with Buffett as his partner. And when I was in college, I was rooming with the state bridge champion.
Wow.
And I could have learned the game, I guess, and, you know, well.
Right. Well, you were too busy studying.
Oh, well, I guess. I don't think that was the situation, whatever the case. Just annoyed by some of these opportunities that I let slip past me.
Yeah. Well, I got a couple of stocks for this evening, and we'll take a look at the stock list. You can see these all on dhunplugged.com. There's a little button to click that says Weekly Stock Picks. And this is a game that we play that is not an offer to buy or sell any security. Stocks may be owned by myself, John C. Dvorak, or clients of Horowitz & Company, and that will be duly noted. And, of course, if you're going to use any of these ideas, please pass it through a qualified professional that can actually give you advice on this, because we are not saying to do any. This is just a fun thing that we do each and every week to see how miserable we are with it or how great we are with it. So a couple of stocks came off. I think we talked about Netflix came off.
Looks like Global Brass should be taken off.
I think you had a 20% on there. Don't you have a... That's a... Well, if not, I thought you had 20% maybe on that one. But maybe not. We'll take it off. I'll take a look. Yep.
No. I don't have 20% on anything that sells for more than $2 a share.
So. I got you. I'll work on that. Opco Health came off. Made 18.5%. Finisar came off. That's been a wild ride, man. That went way up and then just kind of got cracked this quarter. Yeah. Dicom Industries still rocking and rolling, up 18.5%. Budweiser up 8%. That's your pick. You got a bunch of longs on here. El Paso Pipeline Partners, that was good. There are a lot of insiders buying that, 6.5% up. Again, I'm still a little bewildered on DaVita. Why, in fact, it's not doing better with all of the global pandemic, if you almost, of diabetes. Cinecorp up 28%, still holding nicely. Ruth Chris just doing nothing.
And that's a short. You're short.
Yep. Agco up 1.5%. Destination XL just kind of doing nothing. Navistar, which is a buy on your side, making the trucks, up 1.5%. Chipotle short up 8.7%. China Housing Land Development, which, you know, right now the whole housing thing, you see how the Shanghai and Beijing prices of houses have been just really slumping. Meanwhile, I told you I was pretty negative on the home builders, and I think with a good reason. But you know, we keep seeing the bonds, the interest rates going lower, even with the Fed taking their, you know, only buying $45 billion per month, but slowing down. We see that interest rates are still really low, and they've gone really much the other direction this year compared to where they were. Everybody's betting that interest rates are going to go higher. Meanwhile, the 10-year hits 2.6% again this year, down. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. So we're off about 3.5% on that. I have two picks. One short, one long.
Okay.
Finally, I can get the short on Weibo, or Weibo, which is the Twitter of China, kind of. Their numbers look awful. They have a lot of users, but they really don't have a lot of revenue. I don't know, with all the things that go on in China in terms of their... overall, you know, the government's oversight of media and the things they've been pulling off, et cetera. So we'll pick those up as a short. And really, I don't think the company's a great company. And, you know, listen, this thing can go up 10% in a day. It's gone up from 17 to 23, back to about 18, now to 20. So we'll short that. And Acorn, I don't think we've had this on before. Acorn is it's a pharmaceutical company that does mostly eye products. And a lot of drops and things of that nature. They just had an acquisition they did this week, which is going to be fully accretive. And if you look at the chart, it looks like it's going to potentially break out here. And it has broken out a little bit from where it was. On the news of the offering, I think they were 5%, and they came back a little bit yesterday, 2 days ago. And then I think this recognition of what's going on with this accretive transaction on the merger with this company, or the acquisition of the company that they're buying. So this stock could do very well, I believe. Acorn, AKRX for their M&A.
AKRX.
Oh, we can look at the chart. Look at the chart. AKRX. So if you look at this chart, actually, you'll see that when it does come up here on my screen. Okay. You'll notice that if you look at, let's say, a six-month chart or so on a daily basis, you'll notice that it's starting to... Really, it ripped higher above its recent, we'll call it April peak, when the news broke about this. And if you look, Acorn reports first quarter results. When was that? May 7th. Oh, that was the same day. And then you really have up to 20, I call it 27 or change, is right where it's at. It's next resistance. Then if it comes above there, 28, and then you're home free.
You think?
Yep.
It's like a roller coaster to me.
Yeah, it had a nice head and shoulders there. It didn't do anything on the downside. Then it kind of April started coming back up.
You're shorting this?
No, we're longing this, going long.
If you said if you were shorting it, I think I'd expect that more.
Well, I mean, with the acquisition, there's been a lot of, it's 85% institutionally owned, trades about less than 1 million shares per day.
So you're going for that. Okay, because it's got a price earnings ratio of 58.
Yep, I think that will come down a bit, though. And it's a biotech, so that's one of the reasons. Clearly, no question about the fact that it's a high price stock, but this thing, when it moves, it can really do very well. And with this acquisition of VersaFarm, I think it's done a couple of acquisitions this year, but VersaFarm for $440 million, and it's definitely going to add to earnings right away. That's the thing I really like about it.
Well, yeah, the forward PE is 24, so it should like half that for sure.
Mm-hmm. $2.6 billion stock. Any that you have?
I have one.
Mm-hmm.
And only because, and I don't know how to explain this, but it's some other company is buying a stock, and I think there may be a merger acquisition thing or something coming up for SXCP.
SXCP. I got to do it right. SXCP. SunCoke Energy Partners. So they do, if I'm assuming what they do, let me see what these guys do.
It's it says non-metallic mineral mining.
Yeah, they do the coke. They do the coke, yeah, coke for the steel. Yeah,
coal and for the, right. And it just seems suspicious to me the way some things are going on. There's another similar company buying, which is also a director of the company. I just get the sense that there's some boardroom hanky-panky afloat.
Oh.
Something may take place here shortly.
Let's take a look. I mean, it's a coal company, or at least in that space. So let's take a look at what it's done over the last year. Actually, it hasn't fallen too badly at all.
No, it's gone up. Mm-hmm. In fact, it was on a rocket ship there for a while, and it settled back down.
Very, very clean chart. It's right at its 50. No, it's a 20-day moving average. Let's see if I can pull. Yeah, 20-day moving average. It's right at. Let's see what else we got here. Let's do the 50 and see where it is on the 50, which is probably not too far away. 26.5 as it's 50 on the simple. Let's do an exponential. Take a look at that. Right on its 50. Right on its 50-day exponential moving average, which is good. Pays a dividend about 48 cents a quarter. Doesn't have a lot of volume. Let's see. Volume is 100,000 shares.
Volume was apparently one day in May, and it didn't move the stock one way or the other.
Let's see what it is. Why is that? SunCoke Directors acquires. That's a lot. What? That's a large number. Is that 15 million?
150.
How much is that? $150 million worth of stock this guy buys? Come on.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
$154 million?
Yeah.
Wow. That's a good chunk of stock.
Yeah, tell me about it. And the chart looks right. I mean, it doesn't look like. I mean, I was looking at another insider deal that was going on, which is the Microsoft director buying, crap load of that guy, that Mason Morfit guy.
Yeah.
He's a venture capitalist. I don't know what he's even doing on the board of Microsoft, to be honest about it. But he just bought $160 million worth of Microsoft stock. Over the last, with two transactions, both on the 9th, I think one was on the 8th, whatever the case was, he bought a lot of stock. And it looks as if, and I'm looking at the chart, I'm looking at his past performance. He had a company that he's part of called C.R. Bard Incorporated, Medical Instruments
it was
Operation,
bought, right?
Which is at $140.
Oh, yeah, yep.
And must have unloaded $200 million worth of the stock at $100 and right into the up move. It just kept selling and selling as the price went going up and up and up. I mean, normally you sell into strength if you have this kind of, this huge amount of stock. You sell into strength because you don't have to worry about, you're sinking the stock yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But this is like ludicrously, it seems like you're selling into strength is one thing, but this is like selling into a hurricane. I mean, he didn't have to sell the stock at all.
Right. Let me read you something that I find interesting here. So the director, Director of Suncoke. Okay, Suncoke Partners, Director Suncoke Coke. So, did they say which director, or was this, because it says Suncoke Energy Partners, Director Suncoke and Coke LLC.
Yeah, it's a different company.
Acquired 5.3 million shares. The shares are purchased at an average of $28 for a total transaction of $154 million. Following the acquisition, the director now owns 4.9 million shares. So he bought 5.39, and now he has 4.9 million shares. How does that happen?
That's what I said. This is look very suspicious, this whole thing, which makes me think, well, you know, there's something fishy going on here. I don't know. It doesn't make sense, does it?
He went from 154. He bought 154 million. Now it's worth, or whoever it was, 140 million. Let's look at the SEC. This is very, very odd. So it was Suncoke LLC. So there was some kind of just transaction of this deal. Common unit. Yeah, it wasn't anybody's name on this. And there was Aquadia A, 5 million, 4 million. It was some kind of, internal thingamajiggy they did here. I don't know what's going on with this. It's for more than one person. It's probably a group of people. I don't know.
It's a large transaction that's incomprehensible.
Mm-hmm. So what's this? What's the company worth anyway? Let's take a look. What is?
It's just under a billion.
Just under a billion. Interesting. Huh. Well, there you go. I have no idea what's going on. Now it's just results of tender offer.
Put it on
offer.
The list.
Was that the tender offer? Suncoke Energy Department LP completes acquisition of 33% interest of the company, which would be right. Additional Haverhill and Middleton coke making facilities, whole consolidation. Okay, Suncoke completes acquisition of an additional 33% interest in the Haverhill and Middleton facilities. Well, the closing acquisition today, 30%, that's something different, $365 million. So they bought another deal this week, too. All right, well, we'll see what happens. Coal companies, I mean, interesting. Anything else?
No, that's all I got.
That's it. Okay, well, we'll have all this information on the website, DH Unplugged, and dhunplugged.com. You can follow myself, Andrew Horowitz on Twitter, The Real Dvorak on Twitter as well. You can follow him. Of course, his great writings and sites that you could find at Dvorak.org/blog. All the other things he does with Adam Curry as well will be on there. I think you have, what's the consolidation site you have?
ChannelDvorak.com.
ChannelDvorak.com, of course.
It has most things consolidated. There's a few things that don't get on there. I just did a little short piece for the New York Times on teaching elementary school kids to code. And so they put this debate thing up every so often, and they have an article, and then a bunch of people debate whether it's good or bad. And I, of course, took the side that it's bad, because I don't think 8-year-olds should be learning how to code. They should be out playing with baseballs and stuff. Seems to me, or learning how to play a musical instrument. Whatever the case, that kind of thing won't get in the Channel Dvorak site.
I hear you. And, of course, you can follow me at thedisciplinedinvestor.com and check out all the different things we have. We talk to all of our fine guests on the podcast as well over at iTunes. You can find this podcast over at iTunes as well. I will not see you next week. I will be in New York at my daughter's graduation.
And congratulations.
Thank you so much. And that's two off now, and I have one more to go.
Then you're an empty nester.
Yep. I got to figure out what to talk to my wife about again. I'll figure it out. All right, I'll see you in a couple weeks.
Okay.
Thanks.
Adios.
Bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.